Like a lot of people from our part of the world, I have enjoyed spending time on and around Lake Superior, from the shores to the waterfalls nearby to the communities that have grown around the lake. And I always leave wishing I knew a little more about the places I visited.
Well, a historian in northern Wisconsin is trying to help travelers experience Lake Superior in a deeper way by noticing the world around them and asking questions. And she says that the best trips change how we see.
Emily McGilvery is a Great Lakes historian and educator based in Bayfield and the creator behind The Outdoors Historian. She's out with a new guide called Before You Go, Wisconsin's South Shore. Emily, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me here. I'm really excited.
Well, you've spent a lot of time on both sides of Lake Superior, growing up in Thunder Bay on the north side, and then here in Wisconsin on the south side teaching. What need or maybe opportunity did you see that eventually turned into this project?
Thank you. That's a great question. And I would say that as I was traveling around the lake myself in my personal time, and when I was also traveling around the lake with students when I was teaching at Northland College, that there was a desire both from myself and my students to better understand what they were seeing. And when they had a better understanding of how the different layers of the landscape, from the geology to the ecology to the human history, connected, they found that their experience with the place changed. It often deepened. There was often more of an emotional connection. And so when I had some, you know, changes in my career, I started thinking seriously about how I could bring those tools, bring those strategies to a wider audience of people who love Lake Superior, because there's a lot of people. So that was my motivation.
I'm one of those people. I love Lake Superior. And I think get where you're coming from. Like, it's one thing. It's cool. Like, Lake Superior is beautiful. But sometimes knowing more, why is this beach slate and that beach sandy? Or why was there a copper mining town here and not there? The more you know, the more beautiful it is, and the more you can appreciate it. You have this concept called landscape literacy that really speaks to that. What do you mean by that?
So landscape literacy, it really is the idea of beginning to read the landscape the way you would a book. And I agree with you. I think you can appreciate the beauty of Lake Superior without knowing how to sort of read the landscape. But as you say, when you begin to know how to put the pieces together and read that landscape, it enriches your experience. You begin to understand why things are the way they are, how different parts of the lake are unique and how they're also connected. So for me, you know, I think the different pieces, some, you know, geology basics, some ecology basics, some human history basics, those are the framework for landscape literacy. And then it's really about giving people the tools so they could start asking questions. Like you say, I think the really great question that's really rich is like, why is this here? And whether you're talking about a rock or a tree or a human community, that can lead you down so many different interesting places. And even if you don't know the answers at that moment, it can still shift how you're interacting with that place and how you'll continue to interact with it when you leave.
So with your guidebook, Before You Go, Wisconsin's South Shore, you take, I think, a different approach, right? You could write a 500-page geological and cultural history of Lake Superior. Probably people are going to pack that on their vacation. There are a lot of travel guidebooks that say, go to this point and this point and this point. You've done it differently. Talk us through how you tackled Before You Go.
Sure. It kind of goes back to what I was saying initially about my motivation to bring a skill set to a broader, you know, group of people about how they could understand different parts of the Lake Superior watershed. So for Before You Go, I've started with the Wisconsin South Shore. I hope to do other ones in the future. But what I think is, a lot of people in our era today, people have access to information, but they may not have access to a way to understand that information, to curate it, and to apply it to their own trip. And that's what I really wanted people to be able to have, were tools to apply to their own trip that will enrich their experience. So I try, you know, to share some of the geological story, share some of the story about the forest, share some some of the story about the water and the people, but then to go into exercises where people can start to use their senses and, you know, begin to think about, say, if they're on a hiking trail, why does the air feel different, you know, at the bottom of a ravine than when they get to the top of the ravine? What might that say about, you know, the different plants that are that they see today or that might have been there in different time periods? And so that was really my goal with it, was to give people tools and exercises that were really easy to apply no matter where they end up. So rather than following a set itinerary, the idea is you could ask these questions regardless of where you are on the Wisconsin South Shore.
Right. You've got five key questions, things like what is changing, what's enduring, who has been here, and so on. I love that idea of coming in not with I've read some answers, but I'm coming in with some questions and trying to understand what I'm seeing here. What is it? How does it feel to take that approach as opposed to, you know, a tour guide told me all the answers already?
I think this goes back to my experiences teaching, which is that often I think people have the experience that is most meaningful to them when they are beginning to ask their own questions and think about how that applies to their own lives. And I think it also creates an opening. You know, there can be a lot of pressure if you feel like I need to learn all this information and then go and see it and know it. And it can take away from that experience of being in the moment. But if instead you start with what you're seeing, what you're noticing in that moment, and you think about, you know, what questions do I have, or using some of the questions I give as a starting point, that can be a way to experience a place that where you learn more about it, but it really is like on your own terms, rather it being, you know, the information that you thought you should know about it, or that someone else told you from the outside, this is what matters there.
And the questions that we ask might be different from person to person, right? Like if there's a waterfall, spoiler alert, that's what I'm going to be interested in, or the stream, somebody else, that might be the trees or the wildlife, or the person, the, you know, the structures that people have built. This could be different from person to person.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the things I love about it. And, you know, your interests, your background, and what you notice in the moment are all going to guide and shape your questions. I spend a lot of the time traveling around the lake with my partner, and he asks very different questions than me, but often, you know, thinking about his questions will also enrich my experience. So, you know, I often tend to go to the human history. He's often, you know, goes more thinking about like the landscape itself. Why does this rock look like this? Why, you know, why are these things sort of interacting with each other? And so I, you know, when he points out things I don't notice, that also enriches my own experience. So I would say that's, if you're there with, whether you're by yourself or you're there with a group, you know, asking the questions can be a really great way to interact with the landscape.
Emily McGilvery is with us, Great Lakes historian based in Bayfield, creator behind The Outdoors Historian, with a new guidebook out called Before You Go, Wisconsin's South Shore. I want to take a look at a couple of the examples you give. One, you center indigenous histories. In this guide, for example, you write about water as a highway for Anishinaabe communities. Tell a little of that story and why that's an important part of understanding our landscape and the place we're visiting.
Yeah, that's a great point. Thank you for bringing that up. And for me, this is actually, I think, starts fairly personally. I'm not an Indigenous person. I am a, you know, my family is a white settler family to the Lake Superior region. On my dad's side, it goes back to the fur trade. But when I became interested in learning more about the human side, the human stories of Lake Superior, I realized pretty quickly you have to start with Indigenous peoples, and Anishinaabe peoples are sort of these central Indigenous peoples throughout the Lake Superior watershed. There's other groups that, you know, also are up here at different times, including the Wendat or the Menominee. But for centuries and maybe even longer into the present day, the Lake Superior is home to Anishinaabe people. And water was one of their main routes of transportation. So I think, you know, while we can look at Lake Superior today and see industrial freighters and recreational traffic, it's important to remember that, you know, the water has carried Anishinaabe people and their relatives for generations, and that they continue to care for that water today. I think when you understand that history, the idea of treaty rights and why, how treaty rights came about when land cession treaties were being negotiated in the mid-1800s and why they're still relevant today begins to make more sense. And that's one of my goals as a historian, is for people to understand the past and use that to make more sense of the present.
Another issue you tackle, I was wondering earlier why different parts of Lake Superior shorelines look the way they do. Well, part of the answer is what happens when water meets sandstone. Tell us a little bit about what we can learn by thinking about that.
So one of the central geological stories of particularly the western half of Lake Superior is the Mid-Continent Rift. So that's about 1.1 billion years ago when the middle of North America starts to rip itself apart. As the rift opened, it pours lava out in layers, and they, you know, these thick layers eventually sink and form a bowl. You can see the edges of that bowl today in places like the Minnesota North Shore, Michigan's Keweenaw Peninsula, or Copper Falls State Park, just south of Ashland. And then in that bowl, rivers and ancient lakes spend millions of years filling it in with sand, which hardens into sandstone. And then we have glaciers that come through and carve that sandstone, particularly the softer layers. They create the islands we know today as the Apostle Islands. And then wind and waves and ice continue to sort of carve the sea caves and arches that the Apostle Islands are known for. And that's why, you know, today, if you visit the Minnesota North Shore of Lake Superior, you see dark basalt ridges, where if you come to the Wisconsin South Shore, you're going to see those red sandstone cliffs, a lot of beaches. And it also connects to the indigenous history because, you know, Anishinaabe people's name for this place is Gamisquabagon, which today refers to the Red Cliff Anishinaabe Nation and their reservation, but it also is a descriptive word that means place of the Red Cliffs. So you could see how that geology and human history connect in what makes this area distinct.
You wrote a post on your Substack page earlier this summer about how it's getting harder to find good information about places like places around Lake Superior. Internet search, my personal experience, it's gotten worse over the years. Now there's lots and lots of AI information, throwing quotes around that. What are you seeing and what are you worried about?
I think in terms of what I'm seeing, two things with sort of the increase in information. One is just sometimes information that is straight up inaccurate. And I think this happens when people rely on AI and use it in ways that are really sloppy and, you know, aren't doing proofreading and fact checking that are needed. And I say, when I say inaccurate, I mean maps of the Lake Superior Circle Tour, where Two Harbors is located in on the South Shore of Wisconsin rather than in the Minnesota North Shore. So, like, you know, that's a really big inaccuracy that could have been fact checked really easily. The other thing, though, I think I see is that people are able to write posts about places, whether or not they visited them. They can kind of scrape the information for the internet for information, and they may not have a relationship with that place. Even if the information they're sharing is accurate, they may not be thinking about the impact of sharing that. What do increased visitors mean to that place? Does the community have the infrastructure to support them? Does the scenic site that they're promoting have, you know, endangered plants or different ecological systems that are rare or endangered or threatened? And so, you know, if we promote a place without understanding it and what the challenges are of it in the real world, what's special and unique about it and how we need to treat it, I think it can lead to visitors coming there. And even if they have good intentions, they could have really harmful impacts, again, whether it's on the environment or on the people and the communities that live there year round. So those are some of my concerns.
And finally, Emily, you obviously know and love the Lake Superior region. When you travel elsewhere, like say to a brand new place that you don't have that background on, how do you try to get that landscape literacy?
I would say, I think it goes back to asking really good questions. And if you practice asking those questions in places you know well, it becomes easier to practice them when you go other places. If you have time, you know, to do some research, or not research, but reading a little bit up about, you know, the stories about, as I say, like the stone, the forest, the water, the people, that can help. But if you don't have time for that, you know, I've ended up on trips where I'm in really awesome places, including parts of the Southwest, where I have haven't had time to do that, but I begin to look and say, like, huh, like, what colors do I see in the rock? Sometimes there's actually similarities to places you may know well. And those questions can be sort of a way into learning about that new place, whether you're able to follow up on those questions in that moment, or maybe you follow up on them later. Again, I think one of the great things about landscape literacy is it changes how you feel in the moment, but it can also change how you feel about places after the trip is over, and you can continue to deepen your connection to those places.
Emily, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I really appreciate being here and getting to talk with you.
That's Emily McGilvery, a Great Lakes historian and educator based in Bayfield, known for her work online as The Outdoors Historian. We've been talking about her new guide, Before You Go, Wisconsin's South Shore, and how staying curious can help travelers get the most out of visiting Lake Superior and beyond.